Anarchopreneur, episode number 41. From victimhood to victory. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, a free market squad in the place to be? Thank you for taking an hour out of your week to hang with me. I do appreciate it. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. I am your host with a huge ego, maniacal hero complex, Nathan Fraser. But you, more importantly, you are the free market squad. How you doing, free market squad? This week on this episode, we're going to be talking about victimhood mentality and how it holds people back, how it actually makes people easy to manipulate, and some of the evidence for this that I see going on in the world today. Also, in the second half of the show, I'm going to do a complete reversal and talk about how I use victimhood mentality in my marketing. It's not as nefarious and devious as it sounds. Trust me. Trust me. Anyways, before we jump into all that, though, I love these people for everything that they do. I'm going to give a shout out to all of the networks that make this particular podcast possible. First of all and foremost, Chris and Cherie Geo over at Truth Frequency Radio Network. Thank you for not kicking me off of your network. I do appreciate that. Also, Jules over at UCY.TV for picking up and simulcasting this here podcast every Sunday night. I do appreciate that as well. And of course, LRN.FM, Ian Freeman and the whole gang over there, Liberty Radio Network, for picking up the show and rebroadcasting it throughout the week. Much love to everybody that helps get this message out there. I really do appreciate it. And of course, much love to you, the listener. You guys have been sharing the crap out of the show lately. Downloads are consistently going upwards, and that's awesome. So much love and appreciation for that. If you want more of this type of programming or unprogramming, as the case may be, you can always head over to my website, which is NathanFraserShow.com. Told you, huge egomaniac over here. All right, so this week I'm going to be talking about victimhood mentality. Now, in my opinion, victimhood mentality, the idea that I'm a victim, I see it being used everywhere to just manipulate massive amounts of people. And I think the reason that I might see it so prevalently is because I understand how it works, because as much as I hate to admit this, I actually use victimhood mentality in my copywriting. So I'm going to go through this week, I'm going to go through and explain how victimhood mentality stops people from being able to think coherently, how it makes them very easy to manipulate. And then I'm going to approach it from a less nefarious, less manipulative approach and show you how I actually use the same psychological triggers to help people. Now, that might sound a little bit weird, and if you want to understand how I can justify using the same thing that I'm going to complain about, definitely stick around. So let's go ahead and just jump into it. Let's jump into the Live Free FM Focus on Freedom for this week, and we're going to be talking about how the victimhood mindset holds you back and makes you easier to control and manipulate. All right, so we're going to talk about, well, you know what, before we jump into it, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on who I am and how I grew up. So growing up, we were very, very far below the poverty line. We were on food stamps, on welfare, Section 8, public housing, for a long time, like extended periods of time when we were children. We were homeless and living out of the back of a pickup truck. And I grew up very resentful towards people with wealth. We grew up believing that the reason that we were poor was because other people were greedy, that rich people were selfish and hoarding all the money, and that's why we were poor. And because the state was there to tax the rich and take care of us, I grew up always expecting somebody else to make my life better, always expecting somebody else to solve my problems for me. And I grew up believing that society owed us, that I was a victim of society and I was a victim of the system and society owed me. And without getting into anything that could implicate me in any kind of criminal behavior, I'm just going to say that that mindset allowed me to justify some pretty horrible actions that I may or may not have taken as a teenager and a young man. And I'm going to just be straight up honest, until I stopped feeling sorry for myself and until I stopped feeling like a victim of society, until I started taking my life and my destiny into my own hands and started taking ownership over where my life was going, my life continued to go in a very negative direction. When I was 19 years old, me and my little brother started our first business venture. We started a record label, it wasn't nothing to brag about. But we recorded, I think, 4 albums, and we were able to establish a cult underground following. And it wasn't until that happened that I started realizing, and even still at that point, we were still expecting somebody else to come in and make our lives better. We were kind of under the assumption that if we would put out these demo CDs and if we would do concerts, an A&R at some record label would come in, swoop in and save us and deliver us from our lives of poverty. But through that experience, I started realizing that that wasn't going to happen. And I mean, it might have happened, but we shot ourselves. Every time we had an offer for a record label, we ended up shooting ourselves in the foot because we were very stubborn on the type of music that we wanted to make. But as that process went on, we learned how to book studio time. We learned how to hustle our CDs. We learned how to take that money and turn it into more studio time. We learned how to promote our music to event promoters. We learned how to get in touch with people that booked shows. And we learned how to set up merchandise stands and sell T-shirts and get our songs listed on iTunes and get our music listed on all the different streaming networks that are out there. So as that process went, I slowly moved out of the poor picked on me mentality and into the, I need to start taking my own life and my own situation into my own hands and start actively making a better life for myself. Now, as I said, we weren't dealt like a very great hand in life, but it was the hand that we were dealt, and I was doing my best to play it out. And throughout that process, I kind of switched from the victimhood mentality to a victory mentality. I started, instead of looking for reasons for why I was a victim, instead of looking for justifications for my victimhood mentality, I started looking for justifications for why I would be able to arise victorious. And mindset is a huge factor on where your life goes. I 100% believe that. But the thing is as long as I was playing the blame game, as long as I was looking for other people to blame for why my life was so crappy, I wasn't spending any time focusing on making my life better. Now, a little bit of history for my family on why I'm even doing this particular episode in the first place. I have a little sister, and longtime listeners might know about my little sister. I'm not going to name her name because, or I'm not going to say her name because, she has created a lot of controversy for herself on the internet. You know how internet trolls are. But my sister has extensive mental problems. And she's constantly blaming other people for the problems in her life and this has been consistent since she was just a little girl all the way up till now where she's in her early 30s, just refuses to take responsibility for her own actions. And I'm at the point now where I don't actually think she's capable of it because the things that she believes, it started in her teens. She thought she was a victim of gang stalking and she thought she was a targeted individual. And some of you guys might know about that whole subculture of conspiracy theory out there. But it's gotten progressively worse to the point where now she goes back and forth between accusing me of being an alien, accusing me of being a demon, and accusing me of being on the payroll of David Rockefeller to help make her life miserable. And sometimes she believes she's on Earth. Sometimes she believes that she's been abducted and she's on a fake version of Earth and that we're all aliens pretending to be her friends and family members. Like, she's off the deep end. But one thing that always frustrated me about her before I came to accept where she's at mentally was that she just always was looking for other people to blame. It was her coworkers' fault that she lost her job. It was her neighbor's fault that she lost her apartment. It was always somebody else's fault when something went wrong in her life. And the truth is we all have a mixed hand. We're all dealt a mixed hand. I was born dirt poor, and it drove me to achieve. It drove me to do better, to elevate my status in life. It drove me to be a conqueror, a conqueror type mentality. But it doesn't do that for everybody. And you look at like artists and you look at the greatest artists throughout history. Most of them, their great art came from the fact that they struggled. You look at rap music or heavy metal music. Those are the two types of music that I listened to growing up. Most of the bands that I really loved or most of the musicians that I really loved, they came from a struggle. And once they made it, once they got popular and started getting trendy, I hated it because their music would always take a plummet, like a nosedive as far as quality, because once they didn't have that struggle anymore, they lost that hunger and the quality of their art declined. So struggle for some people brings out the best in them, and for other people doesn't. Some people hustle, some people build wealth, and then they end up having children that are born into a rich family, and we envy those kids, or at least I did as a kid. I envied the rich kids, but a lot of those rich kids don't have the hunger, don't have the perspective of what it's like to not have. And so they often squander away the wealth. So even if you're born into a rich family, you're still born with a disadvantage because you don't have that hunger, because you don't have that perspective, because you don't have the knowledge that helps you keep that wealth a lot of times. I got accused yesterday of winning the genetic lottery because my skin color is white. Here's the deal. I grew up in, like I said, low income, mostly black and Hispanic neighborhoods. My family, growing up in Los Angeles, all of my family was Mexican. And the neighborhood that we grew up in was pretty much all Mexicans and black kids. And me and my cousin were pretty much the only two white kids in the whole neighborhood. And we got discriminated for it. We got called honky. And I didn't even really understand what the difference. I didn't get like what was different between me and the other kids until I was much older in life, but I definitely didn't get white privilege. And when we got pulled over by the cops, I got treated just like all my other friends. I got guns pulled on me. I had my pockets, you know, ravaged. I had my property rights violated. So from my experience growing up, white privilege is laughable. I've never experienced what, and people might be like, oh, it's so prevalent around you that you never recognized it. No, I grew up with majority Black and Mexican kids, and I've never been treated differently by the cops because I was white. I've never been treated differently by a judge because I was white. And I will say that yes, in certain areas of life, I have been privileged, but in other areas of life, I've been definitely disadvantaged. And that's true for everybody. Growing up in middle school, Black kids were always the coolest kids. Yo MTV Raps was very popular, and all the white kids mimicked and wanted to be like the Black kids. And all of the, you know, most popular white chicks in high school always were dating Black kids and always were dating Mexican kids. So I never really got the whole white privilege thing. And that's just my experience. But my experience is that, that from where I grew up, there wasn't a white privilege. And then, I mean, to go even deeper into it, it's not like there's college funds that I could get just because I have white colored skin. And I should probably clarify this. I'm not white. Like I said, I grew up in a Mexican family. My grandpa is Native American. My grandpa is Native American and Scottish. My grandma, I'm not sure what her heritage is. I think she was Scottish as well. I'm not like German or anyways, the point is I don't identify as a white person. So please don't call me, but I do have white skin. But half of my family is Mexican. Half of them is Scottish and Native American, but my skin is definitely very pale. But the point is I'm not trying to downplay racism, but white people have problems too, and white people suffer from discrimination too. There's no college funds just for white people. There's no laws forcing employers to hire somebody just because they're white. White people are pretty much the only people that it's okay to be racist to. So even the white privilege is bullcrap, because everybody suffers certain things. Everybody's a victim on some level or another, and that's just the way it is. Now, Blair Warren wrote a book, something about persuasion. I'm drawing a blank, but there's a sentence in it that really stuck out and has become kind of like memed lately, which is, people will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, alleviate their fears, confirm their suspicions, or help them throw rocks at their enemies. And I'm going to break this sentence up from two different points of view in this episode. First of all, in politics, we see this very frequently. We see this very powerful sentence used to manipulate masses of people. In politics, we have on the left, we have the, it's not your fault that you haven't accomplished anything with your life. It's the fault of the greedy 1%, which is a mentality that I grew up fully embracing for a long time. And on the right, we have the opposite. We have the, it's not your fault that you're unemployed. It's the fault of those stinking illegal immigrants. So either way, it's kind of like justifying their failures and confirming their suspicions and helping them throw rocks at their perceived enemies. And this type of mentality has just exploded in the last couple of years. And so I'm going to look at a couple of, I'm going to pick on social justice warriors a little bit here, and then I'm going to pick on the alt-right. So Black Lives Matter has become like this huge movement. And I'm going to be honest, I actually agree with a couple of the tenets of the Black Lives Matter platform, but overall, I disagree with a lot of stuff as well. But when we see these like violent protests or violent riots or you know, recently videos emerged of people that claim to be associated with Black Lives Matter, burning stuff, ripping stuff out of trucks and burning it, flipping over cars, attacking white people just because they're white, like some pretty racist and violent actions. And the people that are doing it are the people that are the easiest to manipulate and rile up and whip up into a frenzy are the people that are most convinced that they're being oppressed somehow by this shadowy white power structure that is working behind the scenes or like culturally embraced to keep them down. And so here's the thing. I work with a lot of pretty successful people, and I've worked with a lot of successful Black people. And the most successful Black people that I have worked with have all kind of grown out of the victimhood propaganda. They don't see things the same way that most of the Black Lives Matter protesters see things. And a lot of them wouldn't be caught dead at a Black Lives Matter protest. And to kind of add some context, Morgan Freeman, I haven't worked with Morgan Freeman, but he's been quoted and there's clips of him on the internet talking about this stuff where he talks about he doesn't buy into the fact that he's a victim just because of his skin color. And because of that, he ends up not being a victim. He ends up being very successful. He says, my skin color doesn't stop me from being successful. And thus, his skin color doesn't stop him from being successful. But there are a lot of people that say, my skin color stops me from being successful. And it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. They end up not being successful. Another example of this is feminism and the myth of the wage gap and the myth of rape culture. Now, I'm not saying rape doesn't happen. Rape does happen. My sister was raped, and I know a few women that have been raped, and so I know that rape happens. But I don't know any men that are like, oh, well, like you always get this, well, she shouldn't have been wearing that. Like, I don't know a single guy that would say, well, she shouldn't have been wearing that. But I do know, personally, I know some women that have been raped, and I've told him, like, you need to stop hanging out with that guy. That guy's bad news. And they continue hanging out with him. And then something bad happens. And it's hard to, I mean, as disgusting as it is, and as much as I want to sympathize with him and feel bad for him, at the same time, it's like, look, so many of your friends were telling you not to hang out with that guy, not to hang out with that crowd. That doesn't justify it, but it does. In any bad thing in life that happens, yes, you're partially a victim of it, but you also have to ask yourself, is there something I could have done to not have this happen, to not have put myself in this situation? And to look at that and say, what could I have controlled to change or alter this situation? That's not victim blaming. That's taking ownership over your life and saying, I'm not going to be a victim in the future of this. Yes, maybe I was a victim in the past, but I'm not going to allow this trend to continue. And that's not a bad thing to ask yourself that. That's not victim blaming, as they always say. But in the feminist, like especially like the third wave feminist culture, there's a lot of like ultra feminists that hate men, and they say that men oppress them, and they act very vile. Their hatred is just like oozing out of their pores for how much they hate men. They treat men like their enemy, and men end up hating them. So again, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I see this also on like the MGTOW or the men going their own way. MGTOW, I don't know. I see it on that side as well. The men that hate women. And they treat women like crap, and they say, well, women all hate us men. And so they treat women like crap, and then women end up hating them. Again, it's your own mindset creating a victim mentality for yourself and then fulfilling that victim mentality. It's pretty horrible. Now, conspiracy theorists, this is the crowd that I have a lot of experience with doing the type of media that I do. Victims of the state, victims of some shadowy organization called the Illuminati, the Jews, the reptiles, the Jesuits. A lot of conspiracy theorists end up building prisons in their mind that end up eliminating the possibility of them ever doing anything good with their life. Doesn't mean that there aren't people out there conspiring. Doesn't mean that I don't think there's any validity in the conspiracy theories, but I see a lot of people looking for excuses to fail before they even start. I know a lot of people that have a lot of potential, and I'm like, dude, start your own business. Take this idea and turn it into something. Oh no, I can't do that because the system's set up. There's glass ceilings, and if you're not part of the Illuminati, they won't even let you be successful and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like bullcrap. Sorry. It makes me sick, like the victimhood mentality inside of the conspiracy. And I guess the reason it really makes me sick is because I fell victim to it for a long time. For a long time, I put my dreams on hold because I was like, well, there's no point. There's no point in following my dreams because we're all going to end up in FEMA camps and we're all going to end up murdered by chemtrails. And so what's the point of trying to follow my dreams? And it was a mental prison that I created for myself, and it stopped me because of my victimhood mentality. It stopped me from being able to reach my full potential in life. Wow, already coming up on the break. On the other side of the break, I'm going to continue with this and get into more of how this mindset holds people back, but then get into how this mindset can also help you propel people forward. This is Anarchopreneur. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right. So each week, before we jump back into the show, each week I like to shine the spotlight on one of the members of the Free Market Squad. And this week I'm going to let you know about Justin Parker. Now, first, I'm going to talk about the problem that Justin addresses, and it's something that I deal with as well. As a small business owner and as somebody who does web and internet work for other small business owners, I see it very frequently that people are not utilizing the internet the way that they could. A lot of people have these very lucrative assets right at their disposal, and instead of maximizing and leveraging the internet to its full potential, they just want a digital brochure. And that is something that plagues small businesses, because I don't think that they understand the opportunities that exist in the digital realm for growing their business. And Justin is somebody who actually takes some of these tools that are available, tools like SEO, search engine optimization, Facebook ads, Google ads, and reviews and reputation management, and he makes them accessible for local businesses in his area, which is the Boston, Massachusetts area. Now, he also works with businesses in Cambridge, Somerville, Medford, and Malden as well. So if you're in that area and you have a business and your website is not doing what you wish that it was doing for you, holler at Justin, and you can find more information on Justin and the services that he provides over at justinparkermarketing.com. That's justinparkermarketing.com. Now, if you would like to have your business featured in this section, I don't take money for these. This isn't a paid advertisement spot. Actually, this is just where, like I said, I shine the spotlight on somebody who's in the Free Market Squad each week. So if you want some free promotion, head on over to freemarketsquad.com, get signed up, join the online Facebook community, and advertise yourself on Self-Promotion Saturdays. Each Saturday, I take one of the members who believed in themselves and their product enough to self-promote, and I help shine the spotlight on them right here on the podcast. So freemarketsquad.com, head over there, join the community. use it to self-promote and get some free promotion right here on The Nathan Frazier Show. And speaking of The Nathan Frazier Show, we're gonna jump right back into the podcast. We've been talking about victimhood mentality, how it can be used against you, and how you can use it to improve your own life and the lives of others.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handycar's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right, we are back. Free Market Squad and the place to be. Before we jump back into the conversation, huge shout out to Chris Gio and Sheree Gio for making this broadcasting available on their network, Truth Frequency Radio Network. Also, a giant thank you to Jules over at UCY.TV for simulcasting. And also a huge thank you to Ian Freeman and everybody over at LRN.FM for picking up the show and rebroadcasting it throughout the week. Much love to everybody that makes the propagation of this message possible. I do appreciate it. If you're enjoying this conversation so far, check out my website, NathanFrazierShow.com. Lots more valuable information there as well. We're talking about victimhood mentality and how it makes people easy to manipulate and how it holds people down. And later I'm going to get into how you can use that same mentality to lift people up, but I'm not to that point yet. Because I just have too many notes for this week's episode, apparently. I was talking about in the conspiracy theory movement and how when I was like knee deep in it, a lot of my hopes and dreams and goals I put on the sideline, and believing that I was a victim of this shadowy organization called the Illuminati that was all powerful and controlling everything. And again, I'm not writing that off as a possibility. But I am saying that in that victimhood mentality, I definitely did a lot more to hold myself back than any shadowy organization was doing to hold me back. That's for sure. And I was living in fear. I was not following my dreams. I was not fulfilling my purpose in life. I wasn't following my goals. I wasn't doing what I was put here to do. And so it bothers me when I see people in the conspiracy theory movement fall into this victimhood mentality, fall into this blaming others mentality for why they can't get anything done in life. And I just wanted to cover that because I experienced it myself, and I see a lot of people out there experiencing it. And I just want to say it's bullcrap. You can do it. No matter how bad the odds are set against you, you can do it. Now I'm going to talk about, I kind of attacked the Black Lives Matter movement and feminism, the social justice warriors out there. I kind of attacked them. I'm going to pivot, and I'm going to explain some of my grievances with the alt-right. On the alt-right, especially like the very alt-right side of things, I keep hearing about this term called white genocide. The idea that white people are targeted and the government's trying to kill Western civilization by eliminating white people, and white people are the victims. And again, some of their fear is valid. Some of their grievances are valid. But the thing is, white people, like I mentioned earlier, it's okay to be racist against white people. The only people you're allowed to be racist, well, I guess Asians get a lot of acceptable racism thrown their way as well. But white people, it's okay to be racist against them. Nobody really bats an eye when you say something racist against white people. Also, cops. Every time a cop kills an unarmed black man or even an armed black man or a black kid, you hear about it. I mean, the media blows it up, but white people get killed by cops all the time. And 99% of the time they fly completely under the radar. So If a cop kills a black person, it's the worst thing ever, and proof of structural violence and white privilege. But when cops kill white people, which they do pretty frequently, I'm according to the statistics and statistics, I mean, yeah, what went into making the statistics, but according to the statistics, white people get killed more frequently than black people do, which, you know, again, just because of the sheer numbers of people on one demographic versus the other, you kind of expect the bigger demographic of people to have the bigger number of deaths by cop. But the fact is people don't get outraged. Just the other day, there was an incident of an autistic kid being murdered by cops, a little white kid. And I've seen maybe two posts about it, and I haven't seen anything in mainstream media about it. A few years back, there was that other mentally ill guy that was beaten to death by the police, and I can't remember his name. I want to say it was like Kelly Thomas, I believe his name was. I might be wrong on that, but anyways, the point is this guy was beaten to death by the police officer. The whole time he's screaming for his dad to help. He doesn't understand what's going on. And he was a white guy, and he wasn't offering any kind of threat. And so the fact of the matter is police violence on innocent people is a problem, and it's not a strictly black community problem. And it's not a strictly white community problem either, but it can be spun that way. A lot of people say, white genocide. I just get so sick when I hear the term white genocide. And I know this is going to turn some of my listeners off, and that's okay, because I'm going to be honest with you. White genocide is bullcrap. The idea of white victimhood is bullcrap. Like I said, everybody experiences oppression. Everybody experiences things that make them feel like a victim. Everybody is a victim to certain things. But to say that there's a focused conspiracy to eliminate white people, to say that the genocide is only directed and focused at white people, that's crazy. Look at prison rates. Look at abortion clinics. Look at the war on drugs. Look at crack epidemics. Look at who's the gang culture mainly aimed at. It's all of these genocidal socially controlled things. All of them are directed at minorities. The war on drugs is directed at minorities. It's directed at putting minorities in prisons. Abortion clinics are strategically placed in communities predominantly of minorities. Prison rates, mainly minorities that go to prison for the same crimes as white people. Look at who the gang culture is aimed at. Look at who is glorified in the gang culture. It's mainly non-whites. So to think that white people are the only people targeted by genocide is crap. There's population control out there. There's definitely people that are eugenicists, but white people aren't their only target. They go after everybody equally. They're going after all of us. It's not like and this whole division of we got to stand up for the white race, or we got to stand up for, you know, Black Lives Matter. This whole idea of dividing into our small little groups and being pitted against each other is disgusting, because we're all fighting the same psychopaths. And instead of turning our attention towards them, we've got our attention all towards each other, and we're all making enemies out of each other. And it's very reminiscent of what goes on in prisons. A prison runs most smoothly when all of the inmates are at each other's throat, rather than at the guards' doors, rather than at the throat of the warden. If you run a prison, it's beneficial for you to keep the black people hating the white people and the Mexicans hating the black people. You want that going on in your prison, because that means that they're all focused on each other and nobody's focused on you, the guards or the warden. And like I said, everybody has some form of victimhood. And the more you look for something, the more you hyper-focus on something, the more evidence you're going to find of it, even if it's false evidence. The more fanatic Christian you are, the more you're looking for demonic influence in the world, the more evidence you're going to find of demonic influence in the world. The more fanatic feminist you are, the more you're looking for reasons to blame men for everything that goes wrong in the world, the more evidence of horrible patriarchy you're going to find, even if it's not actually there, like the myth of the wage gap. If you look for something, if you look for evidence of something, especially if you look for evidence of your own victimhood, you're going to find it, even if it's not really there. So in a prison, the guards will feed you that victimhood mentality to keep you at war with those that you should be allies with. And that type of mindset keeps those type of people in power, both inside and outside of prison walls. Now, Napoleon Hill, I don't know if anybody's read anything by Napoleon Hill. Some of his stuff is so-so, some of it is brilliant, but his son, Napoleon Hill had a son. His son, his name was Blair, and Blair was born without any ears. Now, this was back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and his son couldn't hear. He could hear things through vibrations. They found out very early on that he, those old like record player type things, he could hear the vibrations from them, and Napoleon Hill found out very early on in life that his son could hear him if he would, like, when he would hold his son, if he talked directly at his son's skull, his son could pick up the vibrations, the sound waves coming out of his mouth, and his son could make sense out of them. So his son could hear him as long as he was talking directly at his son's skull. So he'd hold him and he would tell him, you know, the things that he wanted him to hear. He would tell him it, but he had to hold him and he had to speak directly at his son's skull in order for him to hear the things. And growing up, his mom always treated him like a victim, always said, oh, you were born with this huge disability and you need to be coddled and you need to be taken care of. And his dad always told him, hey, this is just something that you were born with, but you need to overcome, because every disadvantage actually has an equal and opposite advantage. So his dad didn't take, Napoleon Hill didn't take the same position that his wife did when it came to how they treated him and what messages they fed their son. And there's a story that Napoleon Hill talks about in one of his books about how his son snuck out and started selling newspapers. His son went to one of the local, I think it was like a shoe, somebody who made shoes, and borrowed a nickel to buy some newspapers. Went and bought a bunch of newspapers, hustled those newspapers, made his money back, and took that money, went and bought some more newspapers, sold those newspapers, made more of his money back, was able to pay back the guy that was the shoemaker. And when the parents came home and found out that the son had snuck out and was out there on the streets all alone, unprotected, the mother was horrified, but the dad, Napoleon Hill, he was super proud of his son. And he kept encouraging that type of behavior. And in college, the son tried something called an acousticon by a company called Dictograph Products Company, I believe is the name of the company. Anyways, it was a hearing aid that worked by picking up the sound waves and directly kind of like amplifying them into the skull. And the son was able to actually hear, like, with this new type of hearing aid that was invented. And he was so excited by this. He wrote the company, said, oh my God, your guys' product, I've tried so many different things, nothing worked, but your product works. And it's improved my life, and I want to become an advocate for this product. So he went and got a job marketing this product, was able to improve millions of lives, became very successful. And instead of going his whole life being a victim, instead of going his whole life not being able to succeed in anything because he was born without ears, he was able to turned himself into a very successful person, and he was able to improve the lives of lots of other people merely because his dad taught him not to see himself as a victim. Even though he was a victim, his dad taught him, don't look at yourself as a victim. And because of that simple mindset shift, it changed everything. So, yes, in some way or another, you listening to this right now, you've been dealt the shit end of the stick. You've been dealt a bad hand in certain aspects of life. But don't let that be a tool that makes it easy for you to be manipulated, because people will manipulate you. People will find that pain point and press their thumb into it. And when you look at all of these different movements right now that are causing division and hatred, all of it is based off of leaders of those movements feeding into the victimhood mentality, justifying the victimhood mentality, telling people, yes, you're a victim, and no, it's not your fault that your life sucks. It's somebody else's fault that your life sucks, and we're going to help you throw rocks at those people. And those people end up, the people that hear this message end up being manipulated. They end up being divided. They end up going out and doing some pretty horrible things to other human beings. And just mainly it comes down to, if you buy into your own victimhood mentality, you're setting yourself up for failure, and you're setting yourself up to be easy prey for manipulators out there. I'm going to finish this whole little rant by quoting Napoleon Hill. This is actually something Napoleon Hill says after he lays out that story. I want to say it's in Think and Grow Rich, but I might be wrong. He says, every adversity, every failure, every heartache carries with it the seed of an equal or greater benefit. That's from Napoleon Hill. Okay, we're going to flip the script. I was talking about how this sentence by Blair Warren, people will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, allay their fears, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies. How a lot of people use this understanding to perpetuate victimhood mentality, to keep people down. Now I'm going to talk about how you can use this understanding to help people up, to help people reach their true potential. So understand everything that I've talked about. Okay, so just a fair warning. This is some Church of the Hidden Hands type stuff, Church of the Invisible Hand. This is not for the unwashed masses. I'm just providing knowledge here. I provide a lot of examples of how this knowledge can be used to manipulate people, how it can be used to hold people down. But knowledge is knowledge. It's a two-edged sword. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. It can be used to manipulate. It can also be used to improve your sales. It can be used to improve and uplift the lives of people around you. So it's up to you how you use this knowledge. And I'm just going to put this out there. I do use this knowledge. I understand that these are the triggers that people have, the emotional, psychological triggers. And I understand how people can use these for bad. I also understand how they can be used for good. And so in the following segment, I'm going to explain how I use these in my sales copy to help uplift the lives of the people that I'm trying to serve. So, we're going to start with the first part of the sentence, encourage their dreams. So the sentence again from Blair Warren, people will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, allay their fears, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies. So encourage their dreams. In my opinion, really, this is just part of being a good person, part of being a good friend, part of being a good member of your community. People need encouragement. I need encouragement. Everybody I know needs encouragement. So if I believe in something that somebody is doing, if I want to see them accomplish something, I'm going to encourage them. I'm going to be a cheerleader for them. In sales copy, for Podcast Blastoff, for an example, I need to know what my reader is dreaming about so that I can encourage that dream, so I can let them know, you can do this, you can accomplish it. And my product or my service can help you accomplish that. So I need to narrow down, who is my target demographic? There's a lot of different podcasters out there. They all have different dreams. Some of them dream of being famous. Some of them dream of making a difference. I want to go after the ones that are dreaming of making a difference. That's the podcaster that I want to serve. So I need to know, what are their dreams so that I can align my message to those dreams and I can make my messaging consistent with that dream and encouraging that dream. So like I said, I don't want to serve the fame seekers. I want to serve the difference makers. And so all of the messaging on our sales page, all of the messaging in our About Us page is meant to encourage the dream of using this new form of media to make a difference in the world. So again, I need to encourage their dreams. I need to know what their dreams are. I need to encourage those dreams, and I need to let them know, hey, you can do it. You can achieve that dream, and here's how my product or service can help you. Now, the next one, justify their failures. Now, this one's tricky because it goes back to the blame game. When people are looking for somewhere to place the blame, they can't move on to a corrective action. So I try to justify their failures, but not in a way that places blame, especially not on them, because I don't know if this is true for you, but I know when I'm blaming myself for something, when I'm beating myself up for something, it's really hard to move past that thing. As long as I'm still beating myself up over it, it's really hard for me to move past it and actually take the actions I need to take to make that situation better. So a lot of times in sales copy, people will say, oh, maybe you've tried other systems and they didn't work. Maybe you tried this diet and you had yo-yo results from it. It's not your fault. Yeah, you failed, but it's not your fault that you failed. It's actually because the food industry is highly subsidized and the corn industry is highly subsidized and the sugar industry is very manipulative. It's these industries in the food industry. It's their fault. I'm going to justify your failure and I'm going to say, now you have the answer, though, because now you have the understanding of how it wasn't your fault. It was actually these other people. Again, it goes back to the victimhood mentality, but you have to use that. You have to say, okay, don't beat yourself up over it. Understand that, yes, you were kind of a victim in this situation, but now you have the power. Now you have the knowledge to no longer be a victim. And the best way I actually do it is I put the blame on me. I don't put the negative on the other people. I don't say, you failed your diet. I say, I remember when I tried and I failed my diet. I remember when I tried to start a business and my business failed because I didn't understand marketing. I don't say it's because you don't understand marketing that your business is failing. I'm going to put it on me and I'm going to say, I remember this, but it wasn't my fault. You know, the reason I couldn't lose weight is because of the sugar industry, because of the corn industry. The reason I couldn't make a headway in my business is because I didn't understand marketing. Again, though, I'm going to feed into that victim mentality, but I'm going to address it and I'm going to help them move past it rather than dwelling on it. Whereas in the examples from earlier, the leaders of Black Lives Matter, the leaders of the alt-right, the leaders of feminism, they all address the victimhood mentality and choose to dwell on it. I'm going to address it and help them move past it, help them overcome the victimhood mentality. So that's the big difference there. The next part of the sentence, allay their fears, which just basically means to alleviate their fears, to tell them it's going to be okay. And the reason why is because fear causes inaction. The fear causes the deer in the headlight syndrome. And I want people to take action. I want them to better their lives. I want them to buy my service or product so that they can get the results that they need. But they've been burnt in the past and they're afraid that they're going to be burnt again. And so I need to alleviate those fears. Just like a child who falls off of a bike, you don't tell them, if you get back up on that bike, you're going to fall down again and scrape your knees. You tell them, it's okay. Get back on the bike. Try it again. You'll get better. You're not going to fall down this time. You're going to do better. You're going to be able to get your balance. You're going to be able to ride your bike. You need to alleviate their fears. Tell them that it's going to be okay if they try again. Yes, tell them, yeah, you might have failed in the past, but it's okay. In marketing, people are looking for subconscious clues that you're not confident in what you sell, because again, they're afraid that they're going to be burnt again. And they're just looking for little clues that to justify that fear. So I try my best not to use words that are confidence robbing words. Words like probably or hopefully or maybe. I use very strong, confident words, and because all of those words strip the power and they increase the fear. And in my copy, I need to alleviate that fear, allay that fear. And if my messaging doesn't have confidence in my service or product, then the reader is not going to have confidence in my service or my product. The next part of the sentence, confirm their suspicions. So this is the thing. It feels good to have your suspicions confirmed. I was suspicious about 9/11. I found Alex Jones videos. That felt good to find people that confirmed my suspicions. And from that, a lot of people go on to buy Alex Jones merchandise and buy Alex Jones promoted Tangy Tangerines and Berkey water filters. Alex Jones understands, justify people's suspicions, and then turn them into buyers because of it. When somebody tells us that we were right all along, that our suspicions were correct, we instantly bond with them. When we agree with somebody a lot, when they confirm a bunch of our suspicions, we start assuming that we'll agree with them on things that we haven't given much thought to. So when they bring up something that we haven't given much thought to, we automatically assume, oh, well, I agree with this guy on so many other things. He's confirmed so many of my suspicions before. He's probably right about this as well, or she's probably right about this as well. Politicians use this. Radio personalities use this. I might even be guilty of using this. So understand when you're listening to this that we all subconsciously do this, that we all subconsciously use this, and some of us actually consciously use this. And I might be one of those some of us that actually consciously use this knowledge. Oh my gosh. It's already the end of the show. I've got a lot more to go. So if you're listening to the live episode, make sure to go back and download this episode once it's posted. If you're listening to the podcast, stick around. I'm going to finish up with my thoughts right on the other side of the bumper music.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right, so picking right back up where we left off, people will do anything for you if you confirm their suspicions. In marketing, if you're selling like a competing product to something and you can call out the reason why the other product that somebody might have tried in the past didn't work for them, and you can accurately explain, look, that was a great product except for this one flaw that it had, and if you tried that product and you failed to get the results that you wanted, it's probably because of this one flaw. Now, I don't believe in running products through the mud. I don't believe in saying, hey, this product sucks because of this, or this service sucks because of this. But I'm all for saying, hey, there are there's competing products for us, and you might have tried some of the competition, and if you didn't get the results that you desired, it's probably because they don't have this one feature that we do, and this one feature can make all the difference in the world. And if you confirm their suspicions that, hey, the reason that it didn't work for you last time is because you were suspicious because you thought it might be because the product was incomplete or because you noticed this flaw. Yeah, that flaw was there. No, that flaw doesn't exist with my product. Give us a try. See that you're going to get different results than what you got with that other product. So confirm their suspicions. So if you can confirm their suspicions about why a different product or service that they might have tried in the past didn't work, they'll be more likely to believe you when you say that your product or your service will work. But here's the thing. Make sure that your product or your service actually will work, because too many marketers crying wolf all of the time leads to all of us being hurt. Too many business owners making false promises leads to a huge amount of distrust in the marketplace, and that's bad for all of us. We want, if we're selling solutions, We can't be selling snake oil. We need to actually be selling solutions. Or at least that's the way I feel about it. I don't sell something that I don't believe in. I don't sell something that I don't actually think will improve the lives of people. But there are marketers out there that are just looking for a quick buck. And every time somebody gets burned by one of those marketers, it makes the job for us honest businessmen and women that much more difficult. So keep that in mind. Every time that you sell something you don't believe in, you're just making future sales more difficult, and you're pretty much screwing up the free market for the rest of us. So the end result of using this understanding to manipulate people into buying things that aren't actually going to solve the problem is that they lose their trust in the marketplace. And when a product comes along that really will help them, they've been burnt, and it makes it harder for them to trust that that product will actually work or that service will actually work. And they end up not buying it, and they end up not getting the solution that they actually deserve. So that's just my little side rant on why I don't use this knowledge to manipulate or take advantage of people. I only use it when I actually believe in the service or product that I'm selling. The last one, help them throw rocks at their enemies. So this happens to me all the time. I don't know if you can relate, but in fact, this happened to me just last night. I was debating with some anti-propertarian on Facebook. A video was going around of some guy walking into an iPhone store and smashing all these iPhones. And the guy was like, "Oh, this is so great." And went off on these fallacious arguments about how a business doesn't, you know, I was like, this is property damage. This is violating property rights. This is trespassing and destruction of property. Why is this great? "Oh, well, Apple's not an actual thing. It's just a legal entity." And I've made these arguments about the state, and I understand the arguments. But the fact is as a business owner, I understand that whether or not my business is a fictional entity or a living being, which it is a fictional entity, the fact is when you start destroying my products, that has real world results. For every iPhone that, if I was the owner of the iPhone store, every iPhone that you destroy, yeah, you're trespassing on the rights of a fictional entity. Yeah, you're destroying the property of a fictional entity, but that fictional entity has actual living human beings that have to suffer the consequences. If you come into my store and start destroying my property, I have to pay for that. It's not like the money just comes out of thin air and I can just pay for those out of thin air. That money comes out of people's hours. That money comes out of insurance claims, and then the insurance ends up being increased. That money comes out of customers, because now the customers have to pay more to cover the cost of your destruction. So no, it's not a great thing. And this was an argument that was going back and forth, and somebody randomly jumped in and backed up what I was saying and said to these other two people that were coming against me, "No, you're wrong." And this happens a lot on Facebook on both sides of the argument. A lot of times you'll be having a debate with somebody, and somebody who you don't even know will come in and say, "Yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, you're right. And yeah, let's throw stones at this ideological enemy." And when somebody comes in and does that, when somebody calls the other people out for putting forth garbage arguments, immediately, even if you don't know this third party who stepped in and helped you throw stones, immediately you feel a sense of camaraderie with them. Instantly, you feel like you're on the same team with them, and you're more likely to help them out now. You're more likely to back them up because they help you, they helped me, or they helped you throw rocks at your enemies, and now you're going to have their back in this Facebook battle. Another example I've heard, Colin Theriau talks about when you're at a bar and there's a sports game, a sports ball on the TV, and everybody in the bar is wearing the jerseys of the team that you're not rooting for. And you're the only one in the bar rooting for, you know, and wearing the jersey of the underdog team. And then somebody else walks into the bar. You've never met this person before, but they're also wearing the jersey of the team that you're rooting for, the underdog team. Instantly, without knowing anything other then the fact that that person is wearing the same type of jersey that you are, instantly, it's you two against the rest of the bar, and you've got that guy's back, and that guy has your back, because you're helping each other throw rocks at a common enemy. So when you help people throw rocks at their enemies, they instantly feel connected with you. So in marketing, I'm going to give a couple examples of how marketers use this throwing rocks at the enemies or helping people throw rocks at their enemies in order to sell products. So the most common example that I can think of is like the weight loss industry. The way that they help you throw rocks at your common enemy is the prove them wrong or make them jealous approach. Get skinny for your high school reunion. Show all of those girls that were so snobby to you in high school that that you actually were able to keep the weight off and you look good 10 years later. Those girls were so snobby and they're going to get their just rewards when they see you and they see how, when you make them jealous, and we will help you make them jealous. We will help you throw rocks at those snobby girls from high school. Also in the, biz op, marketing angle, the prove them wrong. Everybody said that you would never make it. Everybody said that your idea was crazy, that you would never amount to anything. Well, prove them wrong by buying this $999 course. We'll help you throw rocks at those people who said that they would, that said that you would never amount to anything. Again, just picking an enemy and saying, hey, let us help you throw rocks at that enemy. Another example is like, your ex-wife left you and you want to prove to her that, she made a huge mistake. So buy our new car and drive it past your ex-wife's house. Imagine how foolish she's going to feel for leaving you when she sees you in this new status symbol that proves that she made the wrong decision. Again, your ex-wife is your enemy. We're going to help you throw stones at her. All's that you have to do in order to get our help is to buy this new sports car. And the final example is like a beer can. I work in retail and I see a lot of, I live in Colorado and we have, I think it's Coors Light, maybe Bud Light, one of them. They have, team cans. They have cans that have the Broncos logo on it. And there's other, I'm sure in different geographic locations, there's other team logos on different cans, but it's that when the game is on, Bud Light is there to help you root on your team. Bud Light is there to help you wave your middle finger at that other team at the football party. The people that are going for the Steelers, Bud Light is there for the Broncos fans to help them throw rocks at the Steelers fans. So again, if somebody has an adversary, somebody has somebody that they perceive as their enemy, if you help them, if you grab some rocks and help them start throwing rocks at that enemy, those people are much more likely to view you as a comrade and to have your back and to do what you ask of them. So that's how I use that sentence in my marketing. Again, I'm going to go over it real quick. Blair Warren, people will do anything for those who encourage their dreams, justify their failures, allay their fears, confirm their suspicions, and help them throw rocks at their enemies. Now, I do want to clarify, though, even though I do use most of these tactics in my sales copy, I don't use them in the order that's listed here. What's behind writing effective sales copy is not just the message, but how the message is built up, how the message is laid out, laying a foundation and then laying the next progressive step on top of it. And if you get these messages or if you get these key parts of the message out of order, it can completely destroy the effectiveness of your copy. So don't take what you heard here and think, oh, I can lay it out in this order and I'll have some very persuasive sales copy. That's not true. I think the sentence, the pieces of this were mixed up, but I addressed it the way the sentence was written. So that's just a fair warning. Don't just take what you read here or heard here and think that you can lay it out in that same pattern and that it'll work for you. But when you read copy, when you read advertisements, or when you watch persuasive people bring movements into being, watch out for it. Watch out and see how these different aspects are used, how these different persuasive techniques are used. When you're reading an advertisement, when you're watching a commercial, or when you're watching a politician give a speech, look for when they throw rocks at their common enemies. Look for when they justify the failures. Look for when they're confirming people's suspicion. Look for these key areas in the persuasion of others, and you'll start seeing it pop up everywhere. And then by looking at it and looking at how they lay it out, you'll probably have a better idea of how maybe you should lay it out when you're trying to get people to buy your service or your product. And again, don't be afraid to use these things in your sales. Don't be afraid to use these psychological triggers. Just make sure that what you're selling will actually improve the lives of the people that you're trying to sell it to. Because here's the deal. If you want to help move people to a position of empowerment, if you want to help them to get to where they need to be, you have to first meet them where they're already at. So what you're doing is not exploiting their victimhood mentality. What you're doing is not manipulating them through it. What you're doing is taking them from their victimhood mentality to a place of victory. But in order to get them to the place of victory, you have to start where they're at, which is the victim mentality. So you have to start there and then move them to where they need to be. All right. That's this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want more, make sure to head over to my podcast, my website, NathanFraserShow.com. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. I am out of here. Deuces. Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life. And membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.